Proverbs chapter 8 is where we pick it up tonight. So continue through the Bible from Genesis to Revelation. Proverbs chapter 8 tonight. Verse 1, does not wisdom cry out and understanding lift up her voice? This is God's wisdom. She takes her stand on the top of the high hill. In other words, where everyone can see her. She can't help but be noticed. And beside the way where the paths meet, in other words, the busy places. And she cries out at the gates, again, that was a busy place in the ancient cities, at the entry of the city, at the entrance of the doors. To you, O men, I call, and my voice is to the sons of men. O you simple ones, understand prudence, and that means, you know, good judgment, how to handle yourself. And you fools, be of an understanding heart. So a beautiful picture of God's wisdom as a woman on the top of a hill and by the main streets, calling out for someone to listen to her. And again, the image is one where you look and you say, God has to feel that way today, doesn't he? I mean, his wisdom has to feel that way. Here he is. You know, we talk about, well, let's open up God's Word. And all, that's a thought you can take a walk with, isn't it? I mean, if this is really God's Word, and it is, you'd think a line would form. I mean, you got Dionne Warwick. Psychic, I mean, and that was the number one moneymaker infomercial for the last year's running. And listen, I grew up on her music. I wasn't that impressed. The old gag, she's on her way to San Jose. We're going to follow her as it relates to eternity. So, but it's amazing where the lines are forming today. And here is God himself, infinite wisdom, and he can hardly get an audience. It makes you realize how supernatural all of this is. There's a real battle that goes on to keep people blinded, to keep their ears turned away from the things of the Lord, to keep God's people distracted by the cares of this world and the deceitfulness of riches so that our lives never become fruitful and the wisdom doesn't get heard. It really is something. And now they got, you know, all of the 900 numbers and the psychic lines and all that, everything. And it's like the old saying is that, you know, once you reject the truth, you'll fall for anything. And that's just the way that it is. I mean, the world is in just absolute chaos. People's personal lives in total chaos. And how often God, his word, his wisdom becomes the last resort, isn't it? It's beautiful that wisdom, not only as it relates to the world that doesn't know him yet, but for us as Christians that know him. Surely one of the great challenges to his wisdom are in those areas that we think that we still know more than him. And so our Christian life becomes this hybrid of, you know, 40% his wisdom and 60%, well, you know, I've kind of worked out, God, and I'm sure you'll be really impressed when I tell you the whole thing all about it, or whatever it might be. And you end up with this kind of a thing, and then God doesn't get seen in that. Someone has said that the kingdom of God is an invisible kingdom that becomes visible through the obedience of his people. That's neat to know. We're in line at the post office, and we do something in obedience to the Lord's word. Right there, as obvious can be, his kingdom pops out. The existence of it, the fact that it's real, the fact that it exists, it comes forth in the obedience in our life. And so when we move from his wisdom to our wisdom or the wisdom of this world, it keeps his kingdom from being seen through our lives. And so here is lonely wisdom, you know, God's wisdom, trying to gain an audience. But I'll tell you, he has his ways of getting an audience in our life. I don't know about you, but a lot of us graduate from the school of hard knocks. People say, what seminary did you go to? And that's about the only one I know. And just what happens is you live under your own wisdom long enough and you end up beat up enough and scarred enough, and not just you, but the trail of people that you've hurt in your life, and it has a way of bringing us to the end, to where we finally do hear her calling out to us at the top of those hills and in the highways and in the byways, that God's wisdom exists and come. I like this verse 5. Oh, you simple ones, understand prudence. Naive ones, simple. I like simple even better. I'm a simple one. And then he even hits closer to home. And you fools, be of an understanding heart. So, you know, you don't have to be brilliant to understand my need for his wisdom, or that he's a lot smarter than me, and that I should listen to him. And there's no, he doesn't ask for our high school diploma, he doesn't ask for a GED, he doesn't ask for our master's degree from Cal. I don't think he's impressed with that at all. Let me clarify. We opened in prayer as it relates to having a lot of knowledge and no wisdom. You remember Cal, for 2 years, had a man walk around on the campus completely naked, and they didn't know what to do with him. The whole board of trustees threw him in a complete tizzy. You walk into your class, and there's a naked man sitting in the class right in front of you as a woman. And here's one of the premier educational institutions in the whole world, and they didn't know him enough to tell him to put his clothes on. Listen. I'm not that smart. But that's the first thing I would have told that man if I'd have seen him. And then I'd have gathered several guys to help me clothe them before I knew the Lord, if he wasn't interested in that whole thing. But he's willing to share his wisdom with anybody. It doesn't matter. And the neat thing about it is I can come from people of all educational levels, all backgrounds, all different IQs, all different everything, and yet all of our lives can be transformed by his wisdom, and we can understand his wisdom. He's made it simple enough for us. And then wisdom talks about the content of her wisdom in verse 6. This is what her wisdom looks like, God's wisdom. Listen, for I will speak of excellent things. I've never known his wisdom to be anything less than excellent. Not in one way, less than excellent. And from the opening of my lips will come right things. I've never known him to lie, to say anything that wasn't right. And from my mouth will speak truth. Circle that one. Wickedness is an abomination to my lips. It'll never come from God. There's no wickedness in his correction or his instruction from his word. And the words of my mouth are with righteousness. They're all right, and nothing crooked or perverse is in them. Now, what book in the whole world matches that standard? There isn't a book in the whole world. And he says they are, in verse 9, all plain to him who understands, and right to those who find knowledge. Receive my instruction, and not silver. In other words, God's wisdom is more valuable than silver. And knowledge rather than choice gold, not that junky old gold. We're talking choice gold here. For wisdom is better than rubies, and all the things one may desire cannot be compared with her. All you have to do is walk his path for a little while, and you realize that just walking the life, that walking in his wisdom produces, there's not all of the money in the world that compares to what we enjoy day in and day out, just living in obedience to him. I, wisdom, dwell with prudence. And again, that means good judgment. And find out knowledge and discretion. The fear of the Lord is to hate evil. And so that's what the Lord hates. The Lord does hate evil. Pride and arrogance and the evil way. You're not going to find wisdom associating with those things. So wherever you see pride hanging out and arrogance and the evil way, God's wisdom isn't involved in that or those lives. And the perverse mouth I hate. Counsel is mine and sound wisdom. I am understanding and I have strength. God not only gives us the what of his word, the instruction of his word, but he couples with his word the power to obey His word by the Holy Spirit. They're never independent of one another. Paul wrote and in Philippians, and he said that God has provided us with both the will to do and the power to do of His good pleasure. So He gives me the will to do it, and then He gives me the power to do His word. He said, by me kings, or she said, by me kings reign and rulers decree justice. By me princes rule and nobles and all the judges of the earth. In other words, wisdom promotes, and it really does. It promotes people that live under God's wisdom. I love those who seek me. I love those who love me, and those who seek me diligently will find me. And so there's that promise. Here is wisdom seeking us, but it's important for us to seek God's wisdom. Riches and honor are with me, enduring riches and righteousness, and so God's wisdom does prosper our lives. Now, don't go all nutty and get into, you know, defining what that prosperity is going to look like for every human being on the face of the planet, but sufficient to say that, you know, as a general rule, you look at those who live their life under God's wisdom, and then those that don't. It's amazing how that the life lived under God's wisdom, there's just a prosperity to it. Just in where we don't spend our money anymore. I try to stay off the streets most Friday and Saturday nights around here. I don't have good enough car insurance to drive in Modesto on Friday and Saturday nights. So it's kind of wild. But I don't have to be out there. I just try to go to sleep at night with my window open, and I hear everything that's going on out there, every near wreck, every screeching tire, every whatever shots are going on, or those kinds of things. But, you know, you go out, and last night we were out someplace, and you go into the store, and the lines are there buying, you know, the 12 packs of everything and all the alcohol and stuff like that. Hey, it's great. My money goes in different places from all of that. It's funny, when we became Christians, I was making the same money as I ever did, and we never had so much money. Now, don't come for a loan or anything from me. I mean, it wasn't that much money, but it was just like everyone else was working a million hours of overtime. I worked it too because it was mandatory in the job that I had and all, and I was thankful for it. But they're always, always completely out of money and didn't have the bills and the responsibilities and the house payment and all that we had. But God's wisdom, I mean, money just goes where it's supposed to go, and it really is a blessed life. It is a prosperous life. My fruit, wisdom says, is better than gold, yes, than fine gold, and my revenue than choice silver. I traverse the way of righteousness in the midst of the paths of justice, that I may cause those who love me to inherit wealth, that I may fill their treasuries. Verse 22. The Lord possessed me at the beginning of His way, before His works of old. So, before there was a beginning, the Bible begins with, in the beginning, is a good place to begin, but God was before the beginning, and wisdom was with God. God's wisdom was with Him before the beginning. So, God's wisdom has been around a long time, and what wisdom is going to say to us here in this section is, listen, I've been around a long time. When you look at the heavens, when you look at the earth, when you look at the design, when you look at the beauty of it, when you look at the kind of life that God's wisdom produces, I'm behind that. God isn't asking us, when He calls on us to obey His word and to live under His wisdom, He's not asking for blind faith. He's not asking us to try something that could, you know, blow up on us tomorrow. His wisdom's tried and true. It's been tested from the very beginning. And so that's what she's declaring here. There's no risk. A lot of risk today. You know, they come out with all of the different articles and all of the so-called finds, and now, you know, build your life on this, the latest bestsellers and all of that. And there's no risk-free thing in that, because it gets replaced by the next bestseller, and it's on and on and on, all these other things. But here's wisdom saying, listen, there is no risk in building your life on me, because the paths of God are tried and true. They have been well worn for generations, all with the same testimony. Outrageous are His ways. The Lord possessed me at the beginning of His way, before His works of old. I have been established from everlasting, from the beginning, before there ever was ever an earth. I've been around. Me and God have been hanging the whole time. This whole, verse 24. When there were no depths, no oceans, I was brought forth. When there were no fountains abounding with water, no springs. Before the mountains were settled, before the hills, I was brought forth. While as yet he had not made the earth or the fields or the primeval dust of the world. When he prepared the heavens, I was there. When he drew a circle on the face of the earth, when he decided to make the earth round, I was there. When he established the clouds above it, I was there. When he strengthened the fountains of the deep, wisdom was there. When he assigned to the sea its limits so that the waters could not transgress his command, when he marked out the foundations of the earth, then I was beside him as a master craftsman, and I was daily his delight, rejoicing always before him, rejoicing in his inhabited world, and my delight was with the sons of men. And so here's wisdom. Wisdom says, listen, you could trust in me. Trust in God's wisdom. You're going to do all right. Maybe you're here tonight and you have followed every, you know, you've listened to what Aunt B said and Opie said and Goober and who was the barber? Where's Dave? Floyd. Where's David Key in here? Where's David? Is he not in here? Okay. Floyd's a big favorite of David's. You have to. So you know, what is Floyd the barber? We didn't say mumble about life and all these, and then you just end up all beat up, and the Lord has compassion on us for that. He says, "Come and live under my wisdom." And I really like this in verse 31. And my delight was with the sons of men. He said, "You know what I really liked? I really liked it when God created man." And he said, "You know what I really like? I like His plan of salvation." He rejoiced in. Wisdom rejoiced rather in the creation of man, the wisdom that was behind it. Of course, the fall all involved in there, but wisdom delighting also in God's plan for man for salvation. Now, therefore, verse 32, because of all of this, now what are you going to do? You know, you're going to go listen to Lady Guggenheimer. What's that counselor that's on the radio, the German lady that's... Now, therefore, in light of this track record that I have, listen to me, underline that, my children, for blessed are those who keep my ways, hear instruction and be wise, and do not disdain it. Blessed is the man who listens to me, watching daily at my gates, waiting at the posts of my doors, for whoever finds me finds life, and obtains favor from the Lord. But he who sins against me wrongs his own soul, and all those who hate me love death. And so a strong warning that wisdom gives, and wisdom says, listen, if you reject me and you hate me, you're only going to hurt yourself, and that you're only going to hurt yourself. Whoever finds me finds life. And of course, ultimately in the New Testament, wisdom incarnate, the person of Jesus Christ. I am the way, the truth, and the life. He said, no man comes to the Father but by me. And so, the beautiful life that Jesus produces. Whoever finds wisdom finds life. Whoever finds Jesus finds life. Chapter 9. Wisdom has built her house, and she has hewn out her seven pillars. And so, we're not talking about just some junky house. It's a pretty good-looking house and, you know, beautiful and solid when you have seven pillars involved in it. She has slaughtered her meat, she has mixed her wine, she has furnished her table. And so the idea is that she's prepared a feast for mankind. And she's prepared it at a beautiful residence, her residence, and she has really, you know, put out the goods. It's and you look at it in verse 2, it's inexhaustible, the feast that she prepares. Her wisdom, she can't never run out of it. She's got plenty of wisdom for mankind. And then she sent out her maidens, and she cries out from the highest places of the city, whoever is simple, let him turn in here. Now see, that's the hard part, is you have to admit you're simple.
And that's something that people don't want to do, is to admit, I'm simple. My net worth is $250 million, and it took a long time to realize it, but I'm simple. And see, that's the hard thing, because we just hear a title there, a title everywhere, a title, and we're so impressed and all that kind of thing. But there does come a place where there's just that quiet place in my heart where I realize, no matter who I am, sometime in my life I realize I'm in way over my head on planet Earth. So whoever is simple, let him turn in here. One other thing, there can be that great envying of the wealthy or the powerful or that kind of thing. Those things have their own trials. And sometimes they walk a lot longer path before they're willing to come to face to face with these issues than others of us. And so some of us, we realized we were simple pretty early on. As for him who lacks understanding, she says to him, come, eat of my bread and drink of the wine which I have mixed. And it's an open invitation. Freely come. She doesn't say, for those who lack understanding, come, we've got a game of double jeopardy set up, and if you get, you know, the double, daily double on the thing, then you can come in. No, it's just, you just come, and I'll give it to you. Forsake foolishness and live and go in the way of understanding. Verse 6 lets us realize, as she cries out, that following her wisdom is life and death important. And boy, we see that all around us in the world today. Verse 7, he who reproves a scoffer, someone who scoffs at God's wisdom, gets shame for himself, and he who rebukes a wicked man gets himself a blemish or a black eye. So in verse 7, well, it says, verse 8, do not reprove a scoffer, lest he hate you. So wisdom says, listen, I know not everyone's going to listen to me. And not everyone's going to listen to you when you point them to me. And so she lays out how the scoffer is going to handle wisdom in the form of a rebuke. They're going to, you know, scoff at you. They're going to punch you in the eye, you know, and hate you. And that's part of the deal, you know. But you know what makes it worth it? Is for the person that does turn to the Lord. And it's worth it. So you forget everything else when that happens. Rebuke a wise man, and he will love you. Give instruction to a wise man, and he will be wiser still. Teach a just man, and he will increase in learning. And so that's how a wise man handles wisdom in the form of a rebuke. Man's reaction to God's wisdom is never a commentary on God's wisdom. What a man does or doesn't do with the person of Jesus Christ is never a commentary on Jesus Christ. He is who he is, whatever a man may or may not do with him in terms of accepting him or rejecting him. How I handle truth, how I handle the truth, and he is the truth, that's always a reflection on me and not a reflection on him. And that's what the writer of Proverbs is saying here. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. And so that's the first act of a truly wise person is the one who abandons their own wisdom and replaces it with a reverence for the Lord. So the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. For by me your days will be multiplied, and the years of life will be added to you. If you're wise, you are wise for yourself. And if you scoff, you alone will bear it. And so wisdom says to all of mankind, I'm available to you. I've set the feast. I've made it all ready. But I know that those of you who are wise, you will bear the consequences of that wisdom. You'll be rewarded. Those of you who scoff at God's wisdom, wisdom is saying, then you're going to bear the consequences of that. And so there's a responsibility that goes along with that invitation that God gives, not only as it relates to this wisdom, but also as it relates to the gospel. If you scoff, one day you'll bear it alone. You can say, well, you know, boy, there were all four of my roommates, you know, scoffed at Jesus too. Can we kind of be judged in a pack? Is that going to happen? You're going to bear it alone. Verse 13, a foolish woman is clamorous or boisterous, and it just,
it loud. She is simple and knows nothing. And so now wisdom lays out her competition. Here's true wisdom. She's got the feast. She's sent her maidens out and everything is set. The house is beautiful. But she does have competition in this world. And the competition is the clamorous woman, the adulterous woman. And he says, she is simple and knows nothing, for she sits at the door of her house on a seat by the highest places of the city. So she's got a good room. It can be lucrative, only for a while. To those who pass by, who go but straight on their way, she cries out and says, whoever is simple, let him turn in here. And as for him who lacks understanding, she says to him, stolen water is sweet, and bread eaten in secret is pleasant. And so her message is, the greatest satisfaction in life is partaking of the forbidden. You're missing out on life because you're going God's way. Oh man, what you're missing out on, you know. But the stolen water, that's sweet. The bread that's eaten in secret, I mean, that's pleasant. And so that attempt to pull you away from, and me away from, being faithful to God. And I'll tell you, she's out there in a million different forms, and it can be intellectual as well as physical or emotional. And so, but that's her rap. You're missing out on life by following God. Verse 18, but he does not know that the dead are there and that her guests are in the depths of hell. And so God says, I just want you to know, you follow her, all that there is at the end of that road is death and hell. Chapter 10. Now, chapter 10 begins a whole new division of the book of Proverbs. It's the second division. And now we begin with these pithy sayings that we talked about when we began several weeks ago. And most of these little proverbs, they're in just the form of one verse, or in some of them in two or three or four verses. And the form that they take is a contrast. So they'll take one truth and contrast that truth with the other side of the truth, or it'll be comparison. They'll build on one another. It remains one of the poetic books in the Bible, so it's a beautiful way of bringing forth truth. Verse 1, the Proverbs of Solomon. A wise son makes a glad father. That's the truth. But a foolish son is a grief to his mother, and that's the truth. And so we talk about what this passage, proverb, brings forth is the influence and the effect of a child upon their parents, whether for good or for evil, and or for pain. And I'll tell you, there's a lot of truth there. A child is either has an effect or an impact for good or for pain, and creating joy or creating heartbreak. And so it's important as a child to understand the effect that I have on my parents and to make them glad. Verse 2, treasures of wickedness profit nothing. Treasures that you gain by, you know, robbing people, kind of ill-gotten gain, whatever form it may take, just ripping people off. But righteousness delivers from death. And so right living pays. The prosperity of the wicked is very short-lived. The Lord will not allow the righteous soul to famish. He's going to take care of us. And I'll tell you something, it gets scary. And it gets scary when the wicked rule. And it was scary in those days too. God, you know, he calls us to live a certain life and to have certain things that we don't compromise and all. And I tell you, it can come to deal where it's like, am I going to eat if I make that stand? I mean, it's heavy. These are contemporary issues, aren't they? And so the Lord gives this promise. The Lord will not allow the righteous soul to famish, but he casts away the desire of the wicked. The wicked can never, ever be satisfied, because God won't let them be satisfied. They cannot enjoy their wickedness. He won't let them do it. So if you look and say, man, they're getting away with, you know, bloody murder. They're looking, look at how that, and then, oh, that's the life. Oh, my, holding it. And God just says, trust me, I am making sure that they don't enjoy it. And he, you know before you came to know the Lord. So, verse 4.
He who deals with a slack hand becomes poor. This is a lazy guy, and he becomes poor. But the hand of the diligent makes one rich. And so, talking about the importance of hard work, diligence, God rewards that. The person that's lazy, he's going to become poor for sure. And the hand of the diligent makes one rich. And so, faith does not equal laziness. And so I can't be a lazy person and say, well, now I'm just trusting God on this kind of thing. God, again, he really has very little patience for the lazy as we'll head through all of these passages. We live in a day when a hard worker is considered a fool. And it's like, do the least you can. But as a Christian, we don't work for who signs our paycheck. We work for God, and we work for eternity. And if I work someplace and I work for minimum wage and I'm worth four times that, then I have to trust God to get me a job that pays four times that, but I have to serve Him in that place for whatever the wage is, because He's got a wage for me, waiting for me. The issue is never the money. The issue is being a witness for Him in the environment that He's put me in. And so He wants us to work hard. For Christians to just be good, hard workers. I mean, they'd be looking for Christians if that was the characteristic of our lives, and I trust that it is. He who gathers in summer is a wise son, but he who sleeps in harvest is a son who causes shame. And so here you are, the picture is of a field, and here, pretty easy for us, agricultural place. Let's say the peaches are all, we're in end of summer. The peaches are big and, you know, beautiful on those trees. And what would you think about a farmer who did all of the pruning through the winter, and then as the spring came and the rains came, did all of the spraying, all of the tilling, all of the everything, and then finally the tree is just loaded up with fruit, and then he decides to go sleep happy. I mean, it just wouldn't make any sense. It's like, you've brought it this far. Don't stop now. I mean, bring in the harvest. And that's, you know, kind of what he's saying here. The one who gathers in summer is a wise son who finishes the job that he's begun. He who sleeps in the harvest is a son who causes shame. I mean, you've come this far. Don't go to sleep now. Now, Jesus gave us a very interesting insight to all of this, didn't he? In John chapter 4, where he spoke to the disciples and he said, behold, the fields are white with harvest. That might be a good exhortation for some of us here tonight. You've served so hard. You've served so long for so many years. And now here is finally the time of the harvest. Don't go to sleep now. Don't let anything put us to sleep now as it relates to God's call upon our lives. Blessings are on the head of the righteous, but violence covers the mouth of the wicked. In other words, violence comes out of his mouth. He's swearing and cursing and provoking people to violence. And so it comes out of his mouth, and it comes back to his mouth in the form of a fist. So he gets smashed. One of the blessings of the righteous is the fact that we're able to live in peace. One of the great things about knowing the Lord is how many fights he keeps you out of. The memory of the righteous is blessed, but the name of the wicked will rot. There you go. What's that? In other words, there has to be a recognition in our life that the influence of our life is going to go beyond our lives. And so the memory of the righteous is blessed, but the name of the wicked will rot. How many kids do you know of that are being named Judas? The name's ruined, isn't it? How many kids do you know that are named Adolf? It's history. It's done because people remember. But how many, you go around the world and all, and you see so many as they come to know the Lord out of false religious systems, and they want to rename themselves. It's so often the case in India. And what names do they take? Stephen, Paul, Peter, Barnabas. See, these are the names. I mean, the impact even beyond the life. We don't know what impact God is going to bring through our lives even after we're gone. The wise man or the wise in heart will receive commands. He's got a teachable heart. But the prating fool will fall. And the prating fool means the foolish of lips. And so it's just kind of like the teachable heart versus the, you know, the big mouth, kind of the loud know-it-all is going to fall. The wise in heart, they're going to receive the commands and be safe, and the know-it-all is going to go in the opposite direction. He who walks with integrity, that's wholeness of heart towards God, walks securely. I mean, you don't have to worry about things. You just walk and commit your life to the Lord. But he who perverts his ways will become known. It's only a matter of time. It's only the life of integrity is one where we walk in peace. Otherwise, we're looking over our shoulder for, you know, the problems that are going to come. Verse 10, he who winks with the eye causes trouble. So can I just have a show of hand of the winkers we've got in the front? Yeah, there we go, right back. The idea is where somebody's using winking to signal to a partner. Hey, yeah, hey, hello, whoa, hey, hey, and they're winking over here, you know, and then get over here and pick that guy's pocket and that kind of a deal. So the thing is it's a person that's deceitful. He's not what he's presenting himself to be. You ever get those phone calls that they're trying to sell you something at night? It's typically nonstop from about 4:30 till about 9:30. And they'll come on the line and they'll say, "Hi, is Mr. Kyle there?" And, "Yeah, this is Mr. Kyle." And "Is this Mr. Damien Kyle?" "Yeah, this is Damien." "Lord, if I call you Damien?" "Yeah, you can call me Damien. Just get out. What are you doing?" "Well, Damien, you know, and Damien, I was thinking about Damien, and I mean, they say my name, you know, 45 times within 1 minute, and I know I'm dealing with someone who's trying to fleece me immediately. Nobody talks to other people like that." And so just that deceit side of things, and he just says, you know, just stay away from that. It causes trouble. But there's something worse than that kind of a person, and that's the prating fool, that, you know, again, the loudmouth fool, because, again, there's going to be that fall. The mouth of the righteous is a well of life. In other words, there's refreshment for those that it comes into contact with. But violence covers the mouth of the wicked. Their influence is evil. Hatred stirs up strife, but love covers all sins. Now, when it says hatred covers up strife, it has a little bit stronger than, you know, somebody didn't save me a seat here tonight when I came in. And that really hurt me. We think these are the huge trials in life. What's characterized here is the idea of a blood feud. Somebody got killed in your family by another family. And I mean, and then the hatred that just runs through the whole family. I'm going to kill one of them. That kind of a thing. And here, the writer of Proverbs is saying, as it relates, this hatred stirs up strife. It never brings an end. It never brings an end to the situation. But love covers all sins. And so you think about that. The ability for God's love to cover even those size sins within our lives. Not just the little things, but God's love can cover, as Peter said, a multitude of sins. And so it's big enough to do that. And we need to be a forgiving people. And sometimes the goofy thing is we get more weird over some little stupid thing than if they'd have cut my right arm off. You know, it's just silly. And so to realize that, hey, as we deal with one another in the body of Christ, we're going to fall short with one another, and I'm going to do it to you, you're going to do it to me. But love is going to cover the multitude of sins while we're growing together. And so it's just the way that it is. And so, you know, one brings a solution to the situation, the other just keeps it on going forever and ever. Wisdom, verse 13, is found on the lips of him who has understanding, but a rod, that is for beating, is for the back of him who is devoid of understanding.
There are just some people who don't have an understanding of when not to talk. And the writer of Proverbs says that kind of a person, rods were created for them. In other words, they're just going to end up getting pummeled every day, you know. And so, you know, don't be devoid of understanding. Let wisdom be found on our lips and we won't be getting, you know, pummeled. Verse 14, wise people store up knowledge. That's a good thing for us in our lives. It's good to store up knowledge before we need it. And so sometimes we have these pockets in our Christian life where, you know, everything's going kind of neat and easy and pretty lightweight, and you know, the warfare and temptations and serving the Lord and these kinds of things. But don't fritter those times away. Use them to continue to store up knowledge. We'll need it later. But the mouth of the foolish is near destruction. And so the wise person knows how to store up knowledge. That is, not say everything that they know. The mouth of the foolish says everything that they know, and it really brings them a lot of trouble. A rich man's wealth is his strong city, and the destruction of the poor is their poverty. And I'll tell you, that's the truth. We don't like that. We say, gosh, why would God say something like that? But the fact of the matter is the rich do get richer, typically, and the poor do get poorer. Because having money can be very important to making money. Now, God's not saying that that's right. And it's not going to be the system that he bases his kingdom on. But it is the truth, isn't it? When you have money, you can buy quality. You can buy new. You can take care of it from the beginning. You're not vulnerable to, you know, rent to own or to buying the used car that you don't know who drove what and how for whatever. I remember one guy that used to come to this fellowship. He had a Honda Civic, and he had like 60,000 miles on it in 1 year, and he never changed the oil. I can just see it. 19 whatever Honda Civic, mint condition, you know, that kind of thing. We'll only need an engine and 5,000 more miles, you know, kind of a deal. But, you know, the rich guy, he goes over and he buys it new, he runs it right, he takes care of it, and it lasts him 10 times longer than the car is going to go on. And it's wrong. I hate to see poor people ripped off. I hate to see them forced to buy junk and all of that, because they, you know, it just keeps them in a cycle. And it's not right. But I'll tell you, there's a lot of truth to it. That's why it's in the Bible right here. There's a lot of truth to it. But the money allows you to make even more money, and the destruction of the poor, they get taken advantage of because they are poor. But I'll tell you, there's a judge in heaven as it relates to these things. The labor of the righteous leads to life. It's a satisfying life. The wages of the wicked to sin. He who keeps instruction is in the way of life. That's the right path. But he who refuses reproof, that is good advice, goes astray. It's important for us to receive good advice from people. Whoever hides hatred has high lying lips. You know that person that hates you, that just comes up to you and says, "Oh, I love you. And I love that little old dress you're wearing." You know what I mean? And so that whole thing, and the whole deal is, "I can't stand this woman," you know, and the whole kind of, and he says, just stay away from that kind of stuff. Whoever hides hatred has lying lips, and whoever spreads slander is a fool. In other words, what? Honesty is the best policy. But, you know, if you hate me, don't come and tell me. I can't take too much of that. You take that to the Lord. Verse 19, in the multitude of words, sin is not lacking. In other words, if you keep talking long enough, you're going to sin. I'm a living testimony to that proverb right there. In the multitude of words, there's no lack of sin. You're going to sin soon. But he who restrains his lips is wise. And so silence is golden is the way that we would put it. And silence is golden not only for the other person,
It's golden for them. You ever get in a conversation and, oh man, silence is golden. And you're trying to think it right into their mind. Silence is golden, silence is golden. So we tend to think of it as silence is golden for the other person, but silence is golden for us. We have to apologize a lot less when we're silent and ask for forgiveness and you know, try and clean up misunderstandings and all. He who restrains his lips or holds back his lips is wise. The tongue of the righteous is choice silver. It's valuable and it's also tested. It's good, valuable and tested. The heart of the wicked is worth little. The lips of the righteous feed many. In other words, again, their words encourage, they edify people spiritually, so it becomes a source of nourishment for the hearer. But fools die for lack of wisdom. And verse 20, the blessing of the Lord makes one rich, and he adds no sorrow with it. And so the blessing of the Lord is beautiful when he makes us rich in the way he has made all of us rich that know him in Christ Jesus. Listen, there's no hidden hooks in there. Satan always comes in and he sends in his deals. There's a hook hidden in there. Never that way with God. He doesn't add any sorrow with it. To do evil is like a sport to a fool. There's a lot of people, it's just like a big game to them. They love it. They love to do evil. They love to hurt people. But a man of understanding has wisdom. He enjoys God's wisdom. The fear of the wicked will come upon him. Ultimately, he's going to get what he deserves, and the desire of the righteous will be granted. You're going to reap what you sow. That's coming for both the righteous and the wicked. When the whirlwind passes by, the wicked is no more, but the righteous has an everlasting foundation. So one is sure kind of life, the other is an unsure kind of life. As vinegar to the teeth and smoke to the eyes, so is the sluggard to them. We're not talking about olive oil and vinegar here. We're talking about vinegar. You ever smell just regular vinegar? Ever been tempted to take just a big old swig of that? No. Okay. Why? Because if you do, you're going to do what? You're going to spit it out, aren't you? You're just going to spit it out. And so what? You've got the vinegar to the teeth and smoke to the eyes. What is it? Both of those are irritating, aren't they? They're frustrating, annoying, and they really are. It's the kind of person that makes you want to spit and cry all at the same time. Are you guys like going up a level or something? You're not accepting these kind of homey illustrations that I work so hard to come up with? It's hard when you're spitting and crying at the same time, but I'll tell you, a sluggard will do it to you. Especially when they're your employee, and so you send them out and they don't do what you told them to do. And it's the biggest irritation in the world, isn't it? And it really, really is. So often, you know, someone will come in the, you know, they'll want to get involved in the ministry. And, oh gosh, you know, Pastor Damon, I've been fired from every job that I've ever had, you know, and everything. And I just think it's a sign I'm supposed to be in the ministry. Get away from me. I don't have good enough medical coverage to be aggravated by you on that thing. So this, the sluggard, the lazy person, isn't, if you can't hold a job, you're never going to hold a place in the ministry with what is going to come your way and work together with other people. So there just needs to be that working hard again for our employers and working hard for the Lord, because it's got a whole picture there as it relates to the Lord. Wouldn't it be terrible if the Lord said, oh, here's old vinegar to the teeth and smoke to the eyes, Kyle, you know, and we wouldn't want that. The fear of the Lord prolongs days. There is longevity there. But the years of the wicked will be shortened. Of course, crime and disease produce that kind of thing. Sowing and reaping. The hope of the righteous will be gladness. but the expectation of the wicked will perish. And so the hope of the righteous is going to come true, you know. Oh boy, this is what I want. And of course, because the hope of the righteous is heaven, it's going to come true. But the expectation of the wicked will perish. The way of the Lord is strength for the upright, but destruction will come for the workers of iniquity. The righteous will never be removed, but the wicked will not inhabit the earth. One is stable, the other unstable. The mouth of the righteous brings forth wisdom, but the perverse tongue will be cut out, and so silenced. Ultimately, it will. It'll be judged. And so, you know, Solomon had the power to cut out tongues if he wanted to silence the perverse tongue, and one day they will be silenced. The lips of the righteous know what is acceptable, but the mouth of the wicked what is perverse. Much better to know what is acceptable than to be knowing what is perverse. The Bible says that we're to be simple about that which is evil.